Spin 103.8. This is Spin Talk with Lauren. Today, well, this week is World Dyslexia Awareness Week, and today on Spin Talk, we want to talk to you about your dyslexia or maybe dyslexia in a loved one's life and the effect it can have on you. Because today we want to talk about dyslexia as a positive thing. It's a strength and not a weakness. And traditionally, I think sometimes people have been led to believe that their dyslexia is a weakness. So I want to hear about you, how you've been affected by dyslexia and what supports are out there in school, in college and in the workplace. Get involved. You can text or WhatsApp 087 711 1038. Well, Sarah Habubi is a learning diversity expert and she joins me on the line now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Lauren. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much. And thanks for your time on Spin Talk today. Sarah, this is your idea, this new drive, Hidden Talents, to treat dyslexia as a strength rather than a weakness. Why is this something you're so passionate about?
Well, it's not just my idea. Actually, this is a bit of a global movement that's going on. Even the British Dyslexia Association is now pushing in order to change the viewpoint around dyslexia, that rather of being a disability that people have to fight all their lives, is actually to change the view on it, that to see that people often with dyslexia have amazing strengths and talents. And, you know, I often see my clients who come to see me are incredibly talented in lots of different areas of their lives, but because their spelling, their reading is very weak, that's often where the focus is, and it tends to make them think that they, because they can't do those things as well as their peers, that there's something wrong with them, maybe they're stupid, you know, they can't learn. Actually, the opposite is true. They're normally incredibly intelligent and they can learn, they just have to be taught in the way that suits their brains.
So what is dyslexia?
Dyslexia is often described as a difficulty with words, particularly spelling and reading. And I mean, it's a bit of a cruel name as well, isn't it, really? If you think about someone with poor spelling trying to spell dyslexia, I think it's rather unfair.
All my notes are spelled wrong this morning, from this morning, Sarah.
And often because of the way that children are taught, particularly now, it's through a phonics system. That's the majority of schools, primary schools, use that as a word attack skill. That goes in through really the auditory door. And what has often been seen is that the segmenting and blending, which is part of the phonics system, is quite difficult for people with dyslexia. Whereas actually the process that we use is actually using a visual system. So we go through a different approach for learning something like reading and spelling, which actually it's not a natural thing for the brain to do. It's something that was developed as an invention rather than something that has progressed naturally.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. And do we know what causes dyslexia?
There's lots of different ideas out there. It could be genetic. There's no real definition or real idea in terms of actually what causes it. We just know that now there is a term. It's a fantastic term. I only came across it last year, but it's been around since the 1990s. And the term is neurodiversity. And basically what that means is everybody's brain is wired differently. So we all think differently. But at school, there's a kind of one-size-fits-all approach. And if you don't fit into that size, then you're seen as there's something wrong with you and you have a learning disability, where actually it's just a learning difference. So we need to have teaching diversity as well as learning diversity in the classroom.
That would be a great idea. Now, I've often heard people say, Sarah, I'm kind of dyslexic. Can you be kind of dyslexic?
Yeah, it's a spectrum. It's not one or the other. Some people are severely dyslexic, so even things like numbers may move around on the page as well as words. Some people, it's just a case of maybe their B's and D's are being reversed, and that's kind of a classic sign. Some people, when they're reading, the words on the page are moving. So instead of actually being able to see the word stable, it's actually moving around. There's about 41 different types of dyslexia, apparently. So there's lots of different variations and it can manifest in lots of different ways. I think we're probably all on the spectrum somewhere.
That's interesting, yeah, because you said our brains all are wired slightly different. So, it can be. I'm sure it's hard to diagnose. How do you go about that process?
Well, I don't do a diagnosis myself, but unfortunately what tends to happen is we have what's called a wait-to-fail system. So a child, you know, often children when they're learning to spell, particularly, you know, 4 or 5 year olds, they will reverse a lot of letters and numbers anyway. It's quite a typical thing to see. But it tends to be until the child is really, you know, continues to do that right the way through up into maybe second class at primary, that things like that would actually be then taken notice of. But of course, by then, the problem has been compounded after years and years of not actually learning in a way that suits them. I don't do a diagnosis. What I do is an investigation. I actually ask students, what are they doing inside their minds? And that gives me quite a lot more information than actually just observing what they're doing on paper or when they're reading if they're struggling. So it's kind of, I'm almost like a forensic learning coach.
That should be on your business card. Forensic learning coach. I like that. So yeah, tell me a bit about the work you do then with children after you've investigated how their minds are working.
So the process is called Jumpstarting Literacy and Numeracy, and it's based on the work of a woman called Olive Hickmott in the UK. And she's dyslexic herself. She's actually too old to have been diagnosed at school. It wasn't around at that time, but she definitely has all the symptoms. And like many other people with dyslexia, she has an amazing way of solving problems. She's a real, I mean, it's a bit of an overused expression, but she's an out-of-the-box thinker. So when she sees, the way she sees the world is very different from someone who doesn't have dyslexia. And she came across a system which was all about visual spelling. And she was blown away because she realized that she had never been visualizing words inside her mind's eye. And it sounds ridiculously simple, but actually, if you talk to really good spellers, generally everybody who can spell well can see the word inside their mind's eye, and it's still and it's stable, and they can copy down what they see from their mind onto paper. Many people with dyslexia are not able to see the word at all, or it's moving around inside their mind. So what we do is we start working on their mental imagery. We look at, you know, if you were to be asked to think of a giraffe, for example, and everybody's listening, suddenly starts thinking about a giraffe. And everyone will have a different image, though. It might be one giraffe. It might be still. It might be a cartoon. Most people who are highly dyslexic and have amazing imaginations and amazing mental imagery won't just be thinking of one giraffe. They'll be thinking of the whole Serengeti, giraffe, zebras, wildebeest, the whole lot. So if you're trying to learn the spelling of a word, but there's all these images going on inside the mind's eye, it's actually very disruptive. So that's what I'll be actually, that's what I investigate with people, is what's going on. And then I teach them a system for actually developing and controlling their mental imagery. And that involves actually basically de-stressing. A lot of people are quite stressed and anxious in class, particularly if they have dyslexia, because it's so difficult and it's so tough. So we teach them a very simple system that helps to calm the brain down and actually get ready for learning. There's a part of the brain called the hippocampus, and that's responsible for transferring information to and from the working memory, the long-term memory. And when we're stressed, that actually stops working. So that's really important, is to understand that quite often anxiety and stress and lots of pressure can really make these symptoms worse.
Now, I understand you have been working with some primary schools here in Ireland. You've also been involved with NUI Maynooth in their Department of Primary and Early Years Education. What are your thoughts on our education system here, Sarah, and how we support those with dyslexia?
I think it's fairly typical for a lot of Western countries, in that, you know, what happens, as I said, is there's almost a wait to fail system. I know there was a study that was done by the Irish Dyslexia Association last year, and it showed that 97% of classroom teachers felt ill-equipped to deal with it in the classroom. So what that means is that they're carrying on, they're working with as many students as they can, they're trying to gather them up as they can see them starting to struggle, but they're just using the systems that they've been taught. So if it's not working for that child, they're kind of, their hands are a bit tied, to be honest. And then they go into maybe learning support or resource where, you know, remedial phonics, so more of the same is being done with that child, but in a small group or kind of slower. And for some students, that's brilliant. It works really, really well. But there will be a majority that just doesn't work for. So I do feel that Ireland's great because it's a small country, and it's absolutely brilliant at embracing change, really. That this is an ideal place to start introducing this on a really big scale across schools. I have about 20 schools where staff have been trained, either the key learning support or actually indeed the whole staff. And one school in particular that I have to mention is St. Joseph's in Rathwang in County Westmeath. And they piloted this project across the whole school 4 years ago.
Wow.
And they've been using it across all mainstream classes ever since, with fantastic results.
So if anyone is listening now, maybe a parent or a teacher, how can they look into perhaps getting more support for a child in their life?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, from what I do, I've actually just developed an online program for parents, because we know that schools are under pressure. They've got a lot going on. There's all kinds of things that take up their time, energy and resources. So to do a training is very difficult. But parents are the ones who have the urgency and a lot of the stress that's going on right now. So because of that, I actually developed a very short online program for parents to be able to access. And that shows them all the different strategies that I would use as a coach with the child personally. So it actually empowers parents to become the child's coach. So when they watch that and they actually start implementing it, we've had some amazing results back already that show that within about an hour and a half, I know it sounds crazy, but within about an hour and a half of kind of, you know, working with the child, a child can actually start spelling words that they've never been able to spell before, because what they're doing is they're now starting to actually use their mental imagery rather than sounding out the sounding out process. So that's for parents. Parents can also bring their children to me. I work with the whole family. Again, I teach the parents how to be the child coach rather than dropping the child off and I work with them and I send them out every week. It doesn't really work. That works much better if it's a daily basis with the parent. Mm. And teachers, St. Joseph's in Rathwire has very kindly offered yet again to host another training for schools. So we've got a few schools that are interested in attending. That's in November.
Okay.
Well, and I actually have a free talk next week as well for schools if they're interested, come and learn more.
Oh, yes. Where is that?
That's going to be the Mullingar Park Hotel. It's on the 11th of October between 5 and 7.
And do you have a website, Sarah, if people would like to get in touch with you?
I do, yes. It's quantumleaps.ie.
Quantumleaps.ie.
Quantumleaps. And there's an empowering learning bit on the menu. So if people go to that, they'll actually see everything that's coming up to do with this, whether you're a parent or you're an educator. We've got about, as I said, about 20 schools around the country now have been using it, and we're getting really, really amazing feedback.
Excellent.
On the results they're getting with their students.
Great to hear from you today, Sarah. Thank you so much for getting involved in the conversation.
Thanks, Lauren.
That's Sarah Booby there, learning diversity expert. And really, really interesting stuff. Today I would like to speak to you if you have dyslexia or maybe your child has dyslexia. What support do you feel is available at the moment? Can it be quite difficult? Get involved and let me know. 087 711 1038. Louise joins me on the line. Hi, Louise.
Hi, Lauren. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much. You have dyslexia.
Yeah. I wasn't diagnosed until I was around 16 or 17, though. So obviously it kind of affected me slightly more than maybe people who might have got diagnosed when they were kids.
Okay. And so what was school like for you?
Oh, to be honest, it was pretty awful. I just didn't know anything. I mean, I have a lot of difficulties with reading and writing. So, I mean, I used to dread being asked to read in class because it was just a nightmare. And, I mean, I was given some supports, in primary school, but really it didn't really help. I mean, you're brought into the resource room, but, I mean, essentially the teachers aren't actually trained in dyslexia. They're just another teacher. You know, so they teach you just the same stuff that you were learning in class anyway. And, you know, they would get really cross with you if you don't, you know, if you pick it up straight away. And, you know, it was frustrating for you and it was frustrating for them. And you get, you know, you feel like you're being singled out.
Yeah. And did you understand what was going on? Were you able to verbalize what was happening when you were asked to read or you were put on the spot in class?
Not really. I mean, I would say, oh, I'm nervous and I can't understand, but that would just make everyone laugh and that, you know, that would make your teacher more angry at you. And
that is so hard. What about your parents, Louise? Did they notice anything?
Oh, absolutely. They were really supportive and, you know, I mean, dyslexia does run in my family, but, it was just quite difficult to even just get an appointment to get diagnosed. And, you know, I think a lot of my problem was that in person I seem really intelligent, but the thing is when you actually, you know, try to get a professional to diagnose you, it can be quite difficult.
Mm. So how did the diagnosis work? You mentioned, you know, you were that little bit older, finally finding out that you had dyslexia. Did you suspect that you had dyslexia?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I knew something was an issue, but I didn't really know. I pretty much knew it was that, but I didn't have, you know, no. How you get diagnosed is you go to an educational psychologist and they just go through everything. You know, they work out how you're doing things, you know, and I mean, obviously they know what they're doing. They know if you make a certain type of writing, if you do a certain type of reading, you know, that's indicative of it.
Mm-hmm. And how, once you got your diagnosis and then moving on, finishing school, did you go to college? Like how's life now?
Oh, I mean, that's the thing. It was actually really great. Once I got diagnosed, certainly did go to college. I went and studied law and I'm a trainee solicitor now. So, you know, that was good. But it's still, it can be quite difficult because I still have to do a lot of reading.
Yeah, so yeah, it'd be tough, no matter what. Do you tell people, you know, now that you're in college and studying law, like you said, is it something that you have to make lecturers aware of or classmates?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I used to be kind of embarrassed about it, but, you know, I found that when you tell people it's best, but even sometimes when you tell people, they're not that understanding.
Really?
Yeah, like I had one of my friends in school, when I said, oh, you know, for the Leaving Cert, I'm doing my exam orally, she was like, oh, that's just getting an unfair advantage. You know, you're just too lazy. You should have learned your spellings. And I was just gobsmacked.
No.
Yeah. And I had another friend in college who, you know, this is maybe before she knew I was dyslexic because I didn't exactly say it to her, but she said, oh, I think people with dyslexia are just stupid. They say it's dyslexia, but they're just stupid. And I was like, what?
Okay. That is like... That's eye-opening, I think, because people just don't know enough about it unless they're affected by it. So that's, I suppose, why we're having this conversation today. Louise, really lovely hearing your experiences. Thank you so much for getting involved today.
Thank you. Bye.
See you now. You can text or WhatsApp Spin Talk 087 711 1038. Emma is next. Hi, Emma.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you very much. Now, unlike Louise, Emma, you were diagnosed with dyslexia at a very young age. Tell me about you.
Yeah, so I have a twin myself, and she was really smart, like, since we were being really, really young. And then in junior infants, I think it was, they kind of sent me off to get tests done and stuff. And then they diagnosed me with dyslexia. So, but my whole through, like, primary school, everything, I've had help. So it was great.
So your twin doesn't have dyslexia, just you?
No, she's a smarty pants, yeah.
I'm sure you're a smarty pants as well.
No.
Was it? Is that maybe, do you think... Was that why your school and your parents copped it sooner? Because they were comparing you to one another and she was getting things and you weren't?
Yeah, I'd say so, actually, yeah. I never thought about it like that, but I'd say it would be. Because we were in the same class as well, it kind of made it more, I suppose.
And did you notice, I know you were really small, but did you notice that you were frustrated and that you didn't understand certain things?
I didn't when I was younger, but kind of when I got older, I noticed because people in class were kind of getting better at stuff and I was just not, because even with Irish, I had to drop out of Irish class and I didn't do a language in secondary school, nothing like that. So with stuff like that, I noticed, but okay. Not when I was younger.
So was it language and spelling that was a big problem for you?
Yeah, like spelling, I couldn't. I remember my mum, she still flags me to the day that I used to say a D was a B all the time.
Yeah, you hear that. A lot yeah. of people have that.
Yeah, but no, I thought it was great help through school and college, though. So.
That's great to hear. And yeah. What did you study in college?
I went to study beauty therapy in Dunleary, so they were great help.
And
yeah.
Does your twin do something totally different or what's she into?
She can't make up her mind, that's the thing.
No way.
Yeah, she doesn't know what she wants to do still. She went and studied beauty therapy, but she didn't like it, so she kind of dropped out. She found it hard and she didn't realise how hard it was. Yeah. And she couldn't understand how I could do it and she couldn't, yeah. So
that's kind of mean in a way. She's like, if you can do it, it's easy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Not so much a smarty pants anymore. Sure, she's not.
No, she's not. She's still not in a job that she likes. So.
Oh, we're not being that mean to your sister, I promise. Emma, thanks for coming on. Lovely to speak
to
you.
No problem. Thanks a million.
Bye now. That's really interesting that Emma's twin doesn't have dyslexia and she does. And I am only joking about her sister, I promise. That wasn't mean-spirited. Kate is next on the line. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Lauren. Hi.
Kate, I asked our expert, Sarah, earlier on about being kind of dyslexic because you do hear people say that and she said, you know, it is a spectrum. Tell me a bit about you.
So mine generally would be I would get very confused with vowels when spelling, which is when trying to spell and they're in every word is quite difficult. Mm-hmm. So most of the time in my head, I could kind of nearly photographic picture the consonants or kind of see the shape of the word. If it went down further, I knew there was a G in it or a Y in it, but basically kind of slip the consonants in and anywhere I had to put a vowel in was basically guessing and just kind of trying to remember, but not able to really form or learn them or able to differentiate them when I saw them. So that was really my difficulty.
That is such a good description. Like, I'd never thought of it like that, of you just slotting in vowels by guesswork because you can't picture them. That well described, Kate.
Thanks.
What was that like in school?
In school it was hard because generally I would be, obviously, when I was writing, you knew what you wanted to say. And it would be enough that people could read what I was writing and they know what words you mean, but you're just constantly losing marks. Because they're like, no, the spelling's off, although all the content, thought, and ideas were there. Mm-hmm. And it was really just losing points and marks continuously for something you couldn't stop.
Yeah.
I think that's what I said in my comments. My English teacher at the end said, if I could have spoken my Leaving Cert English paper, she was like, you'd walk away with an A, no bother, but because you have to write it, you're going to get a C. And that was just
very tough. You hear that a lot, though, is people with dyslexia. You can talk about anything. You can form words, no problem. It's when you have to put pen to paper. But to the trained eye, someone that would understand dyslexia would cop, she has a problem with vowels. That's dyslexia. But no one saw that.
It was like I was saying to, like, when I came on, I actually sat a DATS test in fourth year, and there's a section on it that tests spelling and tests, like, your ability to differentiate words. They give you three or four words spelled similarly, and obviously only one is the correct answer. And that section of the entire test, I just failed it miserably and couldn't really say anymore. And even when that came out as a fail, before that, all the way through school, it was a constant thing that was coming up at parent-teacher meetings, and it was being said. But it was just generally that it was like, she is coping at the moment, and there was never a push to get, like, a full diagnosis from the school or to try and get it certified.
So what then for you? Like, did you just go on and do your Leaving Cert?
Yeah, I just sat my Leaving Cert and kind of bundled my way through it. And then obviously when I got into college, and you're typing essays, and all, like, it majorly resolved itself, because as I put the vowels in wrong, spell check basically knew what I was saying and would fix everything as it went along. So in that way, I literally went from kind of a C, D student in school to A's at university, which was, like, very baffling to my parents, who were like, God. I was just not the A student at home, and suddenly coming home with great report cards, it was very strange.
Yeah. So even now, today, you still have the same issue, but it sounds like you understand it so well.
Yeah.
Like I said, you explain it so well. So it's just...
I think as well as you start, like, coping mechanisms, like, even if I'm typing on my phone and if I know the word and I keep putting it in and the phone can't recognise it, I'll just use a synonym. I'll just use a completely different word that means the same thing and just avoid them.
Or an emoji.
If it's...
God bless emojis. That's wild. So you've just learned to do that over the years. That's fascinating, Kate.
You just really kind of come up with your own ways, your own strategies to coping with it. Like, I was quite lucky that most of the time with, like, numbers and stuff, now I was bad at maths anyway, but, like, most of the time with numbers, I could manage my way through. So it wasn't anything to do, like, if I was doing simple addition or multiplication, I could follow that.
Yeah.
But just general writing was, could be very difficult.
Okay, thank you so much for coming on. It's been really interesting speaking to you today. I really appreciate it.
Okay, no bother.
Thanks for your time. I've never heard someone explain it like that, the way Kate explained her issue with vowels. So, wow, I really learned a lot today. Thelma's next on the line. Hi, Thelma.
Hi, how are you?
I'm grand, thanks very much. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Tell me a bit about your boyfriend, Thelma.
So, my boyfriend just recently, about 2 weeks ago, got diagnosed with dyslexia. He is 20, so he went through school kind of struggling, always thinking there was something wrong, never really knew what it was. But he ended up doing really well in his Leaving Cert, so always worked really hard and stuff, and he got 290 points in his Leaving Cert.
Good for him.
Yeah, he done really well. And then he went on to do a PLC in history, and he done that really well. He got through and he got his CTAC Level 5 certificate for that. And then he reapplied through the CAO then for a course in Carlow, a science course. And he always kind of knew there was something wrong and he was worried about it. And he approached the disability services in the college, and they basically told him that there was nothing they could do, that there's no way he would have got into a Level 8 course if he had learning difficulties. So he went away. He was a little bit disappointed over that. And he went then and got the tests because he was like, I think there's something wrong here. So he went and went for the really expensive tests and waited the time and everything. And he was diagnosed then with actually quite bad dyslexia. So he was kind of celebrating then. He was delighted. He'd achieved so much to get into school and to college, and he was really, really happy with himself. So now he is doing really, really well and still powering through.
That's good to hear. And we heard from an earlier caller that sometimes just getting the diagnosis, then you're like, well, okay, well, that's what that is. And like we heard from Kate, you have coping mechanisms. Does he have extra, will he have more support now in college that he has his diagnosis?
He's hoping to now. His only really problem is you can't read his writing. Like birthday cards and stuff, he reads them out to us when he writes them. So he's really happy now to be able to do like exams and write up reports and stuff on a laptop. Mm-hmm. That's the only really help he needs, and that's going to make a huge difference for him now.
That's good to hear. Thelma, thanks a million for coming on.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Bye now. Lovely to speak to you. Thelma, the most cheerful person ever. There's loads of messages. I just want to get through a few of them. Dennis says, got told once that I'm too smart to be dyslexic. I got no support in secondary and I did my Leaving Cert without any help. College was amazing for support. Now I have a diploma degree and a master's. I'm working on my second degree and I'm an accounting manager. Louise says, I have dyslexia and no to all of the above. We were asking on Facebook about support. She says, a girl I went to college with says, people claim they're dyslexic, but really they're just stupid. I went to a secondary school with and said I was. They said I was getting an unfair advantage by doing my exams. Oh, I think that's Louise that we spoke to actually earlier on. God, just some of people's attitudes. Rachel says there's not enough understanding or support for people with dyslexia. As someone with dyslexia, I was singled out in class during certain subjects, so everyone knew I had it. And as young kids, they would mock me for it. And as I grew up, I had no choice but to get used to people calling me stupid when I couldn't spell small words or read something. And when I would say I have dyslexia, they would laugh and tell me it was only an excuse I used because I was stupid. My family were supportive of me, went out of their way to get me support, but there was none available. All I had was a resource teacher who helped me with nothing. She just let me do games and jigsaws. And when she tried to help me at something, she'd get cross if I didn't get it fast enough. More really needs to be done. And people need to stop thinking that people with dyslexia are stupid, because we're not. And I'm sick of hearing jokes about dyslexia. It's not funny. It's extremely difficult to try and deal with. More support definitely needs to be available. Thank you so much for that. And thank you, everyone who's been getting involved in the conversation so far. You can continue to have your say. Text or WhatsApp me, 087 711 1038. Is there enough support out there for people with dyslexia? If it is something that you have and you had growing up, how did it affect you? Get involved and let me know.